Your attention, please. The Walt Disney World Railroad, now boarding for a scenic trip around the Magic Kingdom. Board!
Well, Brad, I guess Disney was listening to last week's episode because just today they finally gave us a date for when Mulan will be free on Disney Plus. So basically, it comes out September 4th for premiere access, and then 90 days later, it will be available for free for everybody. It follows their initial plan of a movie coming out in theaters and then being released on digital, and then 90 days after being released on digital, it would be on Disney Plus.
Right. So my one question here is, when they say 90 days, does that actually mean 90 days? So are we talking December, what would that be, 1st? Or is it going to be, you know, December, is it going to actually be 3 months later on December 4th or something? Because, you know, those few days will actually make a slight, no, they make no difference. What this does tell me, though, is, and you know, this isn't, I'm not trying, I like Mulan and everything, but this does tell me that, okay, I can definitely wait those 3 months to watch Mulan.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing that really, and you know, we talked about last week, even if it was 6 months, I probably would be just fine about it.
Yeah.
But definitely 3 months I would be. And 3 months, which, like you said, coincides with the existing rules, basically.
What they announced when Disney Plus came out was their 90 days after release on, you know, digital and disc.
Right. So the fact that they are continuing this with Mulan makes me think it's very likely that they'll continue this with everything else,
mm-hmm.
which also tells me there's not a lot, I think, that I would pay that extra thing to see. But at the same time, you know, I was in thinking about this, I was thinking about Jungle Cruise, which, you know, Jungle Cruise, what, got pushed to next year, right?
Right.
But if Jungle Cruise was this year, I could actually see myself paying that extra $30 because I really want to see the new Jungle Cruise movie.
I probably would too. Yeah, for that. That actually looks promising.
And so I don't doubt that there are people that are going to pay for Mulan as well.
And it is December 4th.
So, okay, good. So 3 months after, that's when, you know, we'll get Mulan. And there are going to be people who are going to do the same thing for Mulan. You know, from what I've read, there's a lot of interest in it. So good on Disney for making a system that works, I guess. And again, I think it's probably better in a lot of ways than the $20 rental. Like, pay the extra $10, get it. The one discussion that concerns me is, you know, this possibility that we could see a lot of other stuff show up on the premier access. And while I get that there are certain things that Disney can't currently release because of contracts with other places and things like that, I don't know. There's part of me that feels kind of the same way that I do when they started announcing these, you know, like paid EMH things in the mornings and nights. Like, I don't inherently have an issue with you doing this, Disney, because it's definitely a value-added service for something that we otherwise wouldn't get. But it's the sort of thing where I'm wondering, when do you suddenly start charging me for something that was previous? You know, like, when does the Disney Plus plan that I currently have that I pre-bought for 3 years become Disney Plus base? And, you know, then you have...
Yeah, silver.
Disney Plus, yeah, and Disney Plus Diamond that gets you the access to all the things or something like that. And suddenly mine is just the, you know, the entry level that gets me the opportunity to buy all the other things. And that's,
right.
And they haven't given us any reason to think that that's the case. And so I'm going to try not to be too down on this, but that's the only thing that I find possibly concerning moving forward. That's what I'll say.
Yeah. It would be a shame if they started to release things that they would not have otherwise because they want to see if they can make a little bit more on it, you know? And I'm sure there are contractual, or maybe not contractual, but things that, like, there may be a checklist of, like, well, this is going to be on Premier Access because it had a budget above this, or, you know, had backing from this, you know, company, or was it made in product, or it was produced in partnership with this company, something like that, you know, that they may have some things that if A, then it has to go in Premier Access or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, well, okay, that's the thing, though. We'll wait and see for now. Mulan, we know 3 months later, and that's it is what it is. So if you really need to see Mulan, pay $29.99. If you can wait 3 months to see Mulan, that's all you got to wait is 3 months.
Yep. So Disney has changed the Gateway gift sign at Epcot, and it looks way better. It totally fits in with the new Epcot aesthetic now. The old one that's like Times New Roman with a weird W did not. I don't think it ever really looked good. Kind of vintagey, but this new one fits in with those new signs that they put in at the Seas Pavilion that we talked about way back when. But yeah, I think this new sign fits right in with the aesthetic of quote Epcot 2021, and I think it looks really good, and it's classy.
Yeah, and you can definitely see, you know, if you look at the Epcot logo, you know, the newest version of it, the E and the T being used from that on mm-hmm. Gateway Gifts and everything. Like, yeah, this is definitely much more in line with the overall design aesthetic, which I do think looks, I think this new sign looks great. I like the blue, what would you, I mean, like, it's clearly just metal, but it almost feels like it's a glow to it or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know, just the way that it's set up and everything.
Yeah, it kind of looks like the darker part, it has like an outer glow set.
Right, even though that's just metal on metal and everything.
Mm-hmm. But the way the light blue interacts with it, it looks like somebody went into Photoshop and put it an outer glow.
Right. So overall, I think the sign looks great. I do somewhat miss the old sign. Comparing the two, right? I can say objectively, the old sign, not great in comparison. Like, just so plain and everything. But, you know, at the same time, how many times have you walked under Spaceship Earth and seen that Gateway Gifts sign? You know, like, so many times. And I think in that way it's somewhat iconic.
Yes.
But at the same time, I can separate my, in this particular case, because I want to let everyone know that I am definitely reserving the right to not feel this way about other things. But in this case, I can separate my nostalgia from what I think is probably, you know, going to look best for Epcot as a whole, and say that, yes, the new Gateway Gift sign looks pretty, fits in better with the overall aesthetic of the park, and I think it was a good change. Though I'm surprised that, you know, I looked back and forth down this Blog Mickey news story. I did not see one thing where, you know, I'm not able to buy a Gateway Gifts T-shirt. I'm not able to buy a Gateway Gifts pin.
No, I mean, no goodbye to the old logo.
Yeah, yeah. Why? Where is my opportunity to spend money to show that I like the old logo?
Well, and you said it earlier. Comparatively, yes, the old sign is not great. But when it didn't have anything to fit in with, when it didn't have an overall aesthetic, you know, that they're clearly going for, it was fine. Like, it was a design choice that I don't care for, that typeface, but it didn't clash with anything, so it was fine. Like, the issue with it now in comparison is it does not fit in with anything that they're doing. So I don't think it was necessarily bad way back when, but since they've made all these changes, all these design changes recently, it just didn't fit anymore.
Yeah, and I feel like Epcot has a overall design aesthetic, and, you know, probably there's somewhere, there's definitely a book that says this is the typeface that we use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the colors, that like all of that has been laid out. But again, you didn't see the Gateway Gift sign directly what compared to other signs and things like that. So it probably never stood out. And maybe it even worked better with the previous aesthetic, but it doesn't work with the current one. And I really like the current one. I like this, what, retro noir look that they're going. I don't know. What are we calling this?
Yeah, it's very retro futuristic. The kind of in the same way.
Yeah, there you go.
Kind of in the same way that Tomorrowland is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. The future world and Tomorrowland have always been pretty separate, because future world is kind of supposed to be the future now, and Tomorrowland kind of represents the future of the mid-80s. You know, it's very like, here's the future as we saw it whatever year that was. But I think this aesthetic being so kind of retro would fit in both places. Although it's I say that, but it's also so clearly Epcot that I don't know if it would.
Yeah, it fits really well in Epcot. And mm-hmm. So I don't know, but yes, I here's the other thing. I'm very glad to see that this sign got changed, simply because it means that, you know, the Epcot thing is still moving forward. Mm-hmm. And with all the discussions we've had about, you know, I think what, a few weeks ago, we talked about all the budget cuts and the new Epcot light that, you know, we're hearing rumors about. Not everything, you know, there are still going to be some pluses to this overall thing, I guess. Pluses. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah, that works. There's still going to be some positives. There we go. That's a better word. There are going to still be some positives out of this overall thing.
Well, and that this gift shop tucked, you know, into the leg of Spaceship Earth is getting some love. It's nice.
Yeah. So now let's see what comes next, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Brad, are you ready for another Haunted Mansion movie? Because I know Eddie Murphy in Haunted Mansion was not enough for me.
I was about to say, were we ever ready for the first Haunted Mansion movie? Because doesn't matter, you got one anyway.
Yeah. So apparently they are going to make another Haunted Mansion movie. So I guess you wouldn't call this a reboot. Because you're not really, I don't know if there's anything to reboot about the Haunted Mansion movie that Eddie Murphy did, but it's a retry, I guess.
A go again.
Yeah.
A do-over. Let's call it a do-over.
So, yeah, Katie Dippold is set to write, and she did Ghostbusters and The Heat.
Hey.
Yeah?
Hey, bud. Just because, like, you remember a while back when we talked about you know, our Disney movies, the flops and everything like that.
Uh-huh.
Haunted Mansion, budget $90 million. Box office, $182 million.
Wow.
So back off on Haunted Mansion. It needs a reboot, because that movie should have gotten a sequel.
And see, this one will have a budget of $200 million.
And take in the $90
million? Yeah.
Let's hope not. Let's hope. But at the same time, 14% on Rotten Tomatoes for The Haunted Mansion. And it's you know what, though? The Haunted Mansion with Eddie Murphy is not a... I don't think it's a bad movie. Is it a bad movie? Like, it's just... It's a forgettable movie.
Yeah. It's not horrible. It's just, like... It's the problem is not with the movies, necessarily. It's that The Haunted Mansion is just not a... You can't make a movie about the Haunted Mansion. You end up making a movie about a Haunted Mansion and calling it The Haunted Mansion. You know, there's not enough plot in the attraction to make a movie. And by all means, like, I understand they made, what, five films about Pirates of the Caribbean, which has about as much plot as the Haunted Mansion, I guess. And so they you know, made a $1 billion whatever franchise out of the Haunted Mansion. So, out of Pirates of the Caribbean. So I guess they can do it, but it just seems
buddy,
like...
Buddy, that's five films with two films yet to go, you know?
Yeah. No, I get it, but it's just like the Haunted Mansion is just... It's a haunted house. It's fun because you get to be in it. Like, the Haunted Mansion is great because you're in the Doom Buggy and you get turned where they want you to look, and it's interesting to be going through this and seeing, like, the hand stretched through the door and seeing Madame Leota floating in real life. All of that stuff, seeing it with your eyes, all of the things that would be visual effects in a film, to see them with your eyes is what is interesting and compelling about the Haunted Mansion. If you just take the Haunted Mansion and make it into a movie, it's just a movie about a scary house. And also, you can't make the Haunted Mansion a true, you know, horror movie because it's a Disney attraction. And so they're not going to make it scary. So it's got to be, like, silly.
And that's definitely a hard line to walk. I'll give you that.
Yeah. See them being successful in that.
I will say, to your point, Pirates of the Caribbean and Jungle Cruise would like to have a discussion with you, because, you know, it's not unheard of for these movies to exist. That all of that said, I don't disagree with you, but I would like to see another chance or another stab taken at this, I guess, because I do think there is more meat on the bones and it could be handled. I don't think it has to go to a hard R, right, horror film. But maybe it needs to be a PG-13, right?
But would Disney want that?
I think they could get away with it now. I don't think Disney, in whenever the original Haunted Mansion came out, 2003, would have gone with a PG-13 film. But Disney now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see them saying, yeah, if you... You know, if you can show them why it needs to be a PG-13 movie, I think they're willing to give the leash there, right?
Yeah.
Well, and I don't have a compelling elevator pitch for a PG-13 version of it. I just wonder if maybe that would open some things up, I guess.
I think this confusion speaks to the, you know, kind of confusion of the attraction itself, where sometimes it feels like it doesn't know when it's wants to be scary and when it wants to be funny.
Well, and so we've talked about Pirates, right? Like many episodes ago, I think.
When we've talked about Haunted Mansion, we've talked about the dichotomy of...
Sorry, yes, Haunted. I don't know why. Sorry, I was to be honest with you, totally honest right now. I was looking up Pirates to find out when the first movie came out, 2003, same time as Haunted Mansion, and what rating it had. PG-13. So Disney clearly not afraid to go for a PG-13 right. rating. But yes, that's what it brought up, Pirates. But yes, we have discussed Haunted Mansion before, like way back when. I think we kind of did a little history of episode and talked about, like, this is our issue in trying to figure out, is it serious? Is it funny? It, like, that issue exists in the ride itself, right?
Right. Yeah. You have the stretching room, which is scary. But you also have ghosts, you know, singing at you, and just silly things too. And it kind of feels like that's two different attractions that got mushed together.
Which is because that's totally what it was. And right. And you have a Haunted Mansion that's being developed, you know, after Walt passes away, and you've got competing ideas. And this is the mishmash that comes of those competing ideas. So I do agree with you. You know what is a Haunted Mansion movie I think I might kind of want to see? And I don't think they would do this, because I don't know that in and of itself it has it's not going to pull in just the crowd that doesn't, you know, is not a Disney super fan or whatever. But I would love a Haunted Mansion movie that gives me the story of the Crow, that actually puts the Crow back into the Haunted Mansion. You know, because you have that Crow that shows up at various places and was supposed to take the role of the narrator and all of that stuff. That is a character that the movie could build on, I think. And it's a character that exists throughout the Haunted Mansion. So there you go. Take that idea, Katie. Is Katie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Take that idea, Katie. Run with it. Give me the story of the Crow. Give me why the Crow is there what it's trying to tell us that whole time. That's a take on the Haunted Mansion that I haven't been given yet.
Yeah. I think that could actually be interesting too. And you could have a little bit of humor, because you could have the narrator being funny or sarcastic or whatever. Like, I think you could, that would be good. And it would be interesting and unusual.
Yeah. So I think that's the trick here is how do you be inspired by the attraction? How do you have enough nods to the attraction so that people get that it's a thing, and at the same time not be so beholden to the attraction that it's just a paint by number sort of thing.
Right.
And that's what they managed to make work. Like, regardless of what you may feel about the later Pirates movies, they made that first one work amazingly well, I think. And you know, because I looked at it and went, yeah, that is, you know, there's definitely stuff in here that's Pirates of the Caribbean. But it was just barely a Pirates of the Caribbean movie. And it was a lot just a pirate movie.
Yeah. Well, and I think
with a crazy guy on it.
I think the fair comparison is to Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl, the first one.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm saying is, you know, all of the, and well, they've got two more in the works. So a lot of people have felt very, but I know I'm just saying, because I know that the other movies are not, you know, there's a lot more controversy about those films and where they should be placed and all those sort of things. But Black Pearl, I think, is pretty, you know, pretty well ranked and rated and et cetera, et cetera. So I don't see any reason Haunted Mansion couldn't have a movie like that. And then once it does, like, but are there, the other thing that this kind of made me wonder about is, are there other Disney attractions that let's assume that Haunted Mansion reboot, redo, do over does really well. I think that at that point, Disney does this with other attractions, but what attraction would be next? Is it going to be Big Thunder Mountain or Space Mountain that's suddenly going to get this?
I think Big Thunder Mountain would be better than Space Mountain.
It's hard because
it is. I'm sitting here trying to think, like, what would a Space Mountain movie be about?
And see, that is where I look at Haunted Mansion and say, okay, so maybe Haunted Mansion could have something done to it, because I look at either one, even Big Thunder, right? Like, I look at that and I'm like, I don't know that you can really make a movie like a movie about Big Thunder Mountain Railroad is a Western, right? Mm-hmm. Is an action Western.
Yes.
Hey, could you just like rebrand Wild Wild West to be Big Thunder Mountain Railroad?
I don't know. There's no giant spiders
yet. Hey. There was also no Johnny Depp in Pirates, you know, when the Black Pearl came out, and then there was. So you could always, I think you could add that spider, you know, like maybe in the, when you're, right now, when you're going under the dinosaur bones, that could be spider legs. There you go. Wild Wild West is now Big Thunder Mountain. And they don't even have to pay for another movie to get made. They can just re-release it, slap a new title on the front, and you're done.
Bada bing, bada boom.
Mm-hmm. There aren't a lot of attractions, I think, that, like, it takes a certain attraction to have enough meat on its bones and not be already an IP attraction, right? Like, we're not going to start talking about, hey, Jeremy, do you think Dumbo needs an attraction based? Oh, wait, or does it need a movie? Because it's already got one.
Yeah.
Now, one attraction that I do believe would be harder because of the, sorry, real time, I'm coming up with a better version of this, but I'm going to go ahead and start off with the one, and then I'm going to tell you how to fix it. One attraction that I think needs a better movie, because it's got one, but it would be hard to do because it is so well tied into a lot of stuff, Tower of Terror. Because the Tower of Terror movie is entirely forgettable to the point that I can't even, like, Steve Guttenberg is in that movie. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there you go. That's about what I can remember of the Tower of Terror movie. But I'd love to have a Tower of Terror movie, like a really good Tower of Terror movie. But at the same time, being so tied into the whole Twilight Zone thing and everything, I don't know how much room you have to work there.
Yeah, it would almost have to be a Twilight Zone movie.
Right. But again, in real time, I had the fix for this. The fix for this is I don't want an American Tower of Terror movie. I want a Japanese Tower of Terror movie in English, please, because I don't want to. You know what? Hey, I'm subs no dubs for life. So if I've got to watch it with subtitles, I will. But yeah, that attraction has a great backstory that I think would fit so well into a film. And like the film is basically already written, and that's the thing. These non IP attractions, they do have a film written, right? Like there are scenes, and true with Haunted Mansion, you can't just take somebody through the scenes of a haunted house and make it work.
Right.
But it does have a story, a disjointed story, but you're just going to have to pick one of them and then make it work, I think.
Yeah, you have to. It's like the Pirates thing. You know, you just kind of have to glom onto one piece of that story of the attraction and just build a story, a screenplay around it.
So clearly we think this is super easy and this movie will be out in no time flat, right?
Yeah, just get on it. Well, Brad, finally, to wrap up, our dear friend attraction, Rise of the Resistance, had more woes today. This time it wasn't their fault, though. I guess lightning really wasn't their fault either, but today there was a worldwide internet outage. CenturyLink had a big outage, which totally broke boarding groups. So for a while this morning, for a few hours after park opened, you just couldn't get into a boarding group, and you had to kind of just wait, and Disney couldn't do anything about it, and they just kind of had to wait for the internet to be fixed, which doesn't happen very often, but it's kind of like when Amazon Web Services goes down and it just like breaks half the internet. I guess these boarding groups just happened to be hosted by somebody that works off of CenturyLink, and I just, man, things can't go right for Rise of the Resistance since Disney World reopened.
So, okay, there are two things about this that are kind of weird to me. One of them I'm less weirded out about. One of them I'm really weirded out about and really surprised by. So let's start off with the thing that I'm not so kind of weirded out about, but not so much. When this all happened, part of the story that came out was not only is it down, but they didn't open up the normal queue, right? Because to some extent, you kind of look at it and go, well, if you're going to be down for the day because you don't have the ability to offer a virtual queue, just offer a regular queue. You do have it there. But I guess I'm not quite so surprised by that, because I feel like they aren't prepared to do a regular queue for Rise of the Resistance.
Well, or they... the, you know, CenturyLink was down. Somebody said, we're not going to be able to do boarding groups. And they went, good. Get to work.
Right. Yeah. You've got some more time to do this. So
an uninterrupted 4 hours. Hooray.
The boarding. Well, an uninterrupted, who knows how long time.
Right.
So that is surprising, but not so surprising, because I get that, you know, there has to be more planning that doesn't. You can't really just, you know, turn that on a dime when it comes to suddenly opening up normal boarding groups when you have no plans for how to do that yet. And based on everything, they aren't even kind of thinking about normal boarding groups yet. The thing that is more surprising and somewhat concerning to me is that it seems like whatever they're using. And I don't know. I'm still trying to figure this out, and I'm hoping that this isn't the case. But it seems like whatever they're on, it has a single point of failure with level 3, you know, well, with CenturyLink.
Yeah, but man, that's the backbone.
No,
I mean,
that's a no.
So
that's
many.
A backbone. That is not. I'm sorry, but I don't think that's an excuse.
I don't think that's fair, because Gmail went down, Brad. Gmail was down this morning.
For the entire outage period or for a short period of time?
I don't know that, but I know it died for a while.
So I have nothing, you know, if you have a 30-minute outage because of this, totally understandable. But like, I'm curious, and I don't want to put the blame on them because I haven't researched fully who was hosting them. And gosh, this is getting nerdy. You know, if you will be back next week, missingthemouse.co at MTM Podcast, facebook.com/MTM Podcast. Okay, getting back to the nerdy stuff. You know, I don't know. Maybe there was some weird routing stuff that was going on that was preventing the backups. But like, I feel like most NOCs are going to offer multiple, like the NOC that that my company hosts on has got at least three tier one providers coming into it. And we are not Disney. Disney is a much, much bigger company than us, which is, you know what, I feel okay saying, because for a lot of companies, for the vast majority of companies, you have to be able to say that Disney is bigger than you and that your NOC doesn't have, you know, access to, you know, to Cogent or what, or some, or NTT or somebody like that to do fall over, and you just publish the new routes and you just keep on going, right? Like I quite honestly, I would be less disturbed by this whole situation if it had been something like AWS or Azure went down, right? Because if you host on AWS or Azure and they have it's one thing when, say, like US South, you know, goes down on Azure. Hopefully, again, if you're Disney and you've got Disney money, you've got replication set up, so everything just, you know, redirects to another location. But if it as a whole goes down because of some weird, you know, DDoS or something, then that's understandable to me. But that's not the case. Like, they went down on a backbone, and there are other backbones, and most NOCs have multiple backbones running into them. So that's what's weird to me is why did they have this 4-hour outage? And again, I am disturbed by the idea that they could be on something that's only served by a single location. But at the same time, I think and I hope that the more likely scenario is something was wonky with routes that prevented them from using one of their like backups and their fallovers.
It's possible. And AWS also did go down briefly this morning.
Well, because AWS has got, but that's briefly, right? Like that's the key thing here is I'm sure they're being hosted by that and they just moved over.
This also affected briefly dining reservations also. So I think probably what happened is dining reservations and FastPass Plus likely is hosted, like you're saying, somewhere where they have fall over and they can very easily, you know, publish new routes, be good to go. Boarding groups may not have been set up that way because it was going to be temporary. And I doubt they were thinking 10 months into this attraction being open that they'd still be using boarding groups. I don't know. I think it's possible that it's literally because boarding group functionality was written in a hurry because they realized 2 months before opening or whatever, like, we're going to need something to meter the amount of people coming into this attraction.
Well, and as a developer, the thing that I think is probably really likely, but is the thing that nobody wants to admit to, boarding groups were likely written as a temporary solution. And when you write things that are supposed to be a temporary solution, they don't get everything that, like, you know, the dining system and the FastPass Plus system, mm-hmm. like that had to be designed in mind of this is a new thing that's going to be used by all these people for all of this time. Boarding groups was very likely written as something that is going to be needed, but maybe for a month. And so yeah, it just has to work for a month.
Right. Yep. But, totally agree.
It cannot catch a break. And that is that is just sad.
And it's the flagship attraction.
Yeah, the flagship attraction. Well, maybe, I don't know. Sometimes I honestly start wondering.
A tent pole, maybe?
Yeah, I honestly start wondering, like, are they just going to keep it like this because, if it's hard to get into, that makes it more something that people want worse? Or, I don't even know.
Exclusive. I saw something else interesting today. There is an animatronic at the end of the attraction that is pretty big, and apparently it can't be reset until the end of the day. Like, I don't know why, but it was broken today. It did not work, and apparently they can't just like reset it on the fly. It has to be, I guess, after it closes, because it takes a long time or something. So they also have set pieces that cannot be reset quickly. So that, there's another point of
this attraction is going to be great in like 10 years when
yeah.
Rise of the Resistance 2.0 is built on Rise of the Resistance 1.0's ashes.
So I don't know. I just like
after another lightning strike
again. Yeah, again. I wish them only the best. I hope that they use the time to or the time that they had to really get in there and run that thing through as many times as possible.
Yeah. So real quick, not that I have any reason to believe that these people are listening, but on the off chance that you are someone involved in the production, the attempting to fix of Rise of the Resistance, the virtual boarding groups, anything like that, I feel bad for you. I mean, I know that you're doing all you can, and we wish you nothing but the best. And yes, we make jokes at your expense, but gosh darn it, we don't envy you guys, and best of luck.
I think that'll do it for this episode. You can follow us on Twitter at MTM Podcast. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/MTM Podcast. You can visit us on the web at missingthemouse.co. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. And until then, have a magical day.